This episode of Off Course is brought to you by Bag Boy. For 75 years, Bag Boy has been at the forefront of pulp cart production, challenging what is possible and pursuing various ways of bolstering the walking experience. From the two-wheel wonders of the 60s to the three- and four-wheel carts of today, Bag Boy continues to provide an optimal experience for the walking golfer. Visit www.bagboy.com for more info.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back to a brand new episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and with me today is the executive producer extraordinaire, Jeff Newbarth. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. I'm a little bummed JB's not able to join us, but I know we are recording this relatively early in the morning, you know, kind of before noon. So it's probably isn't, you know, gotten up yet.
I don't think there's a morning time that doesn't exist in his brain. If it's anything, it's a late night, the recording that he'd be missing.
Yeah, no, that makes more sense. But anyways, glad to be with you and excited to have a nice chat.
Yeah. So you are currently experiencing Montana Monday. What's that like?
Oh man. As you mentioned, I'm here in Big Sky, Montana, and I'm just kind of looking out the room right now. And, you know, there's, you know, look, I grew up in Florida. I live in San Diego, and I've never seen anything like this place. You know, I mean, there's mountains everywhere and evergreen trees. And, you know, I mean, there's a chairlift that they say is the fastest 6-person chairlift in North America outside my hotel room. And I've seen people like mountain biking down this mountain that I'm terrified of heights. So I wouldn't go up there in a million years. And then you add this golf course, you know, this Moonlight Basin golf course. You know, we're here obviously for the match. It's just phenomenal. And it's really, really cool to see something just completely different. It's visually mind blowing.
So I know when you talk to Californians, they say it's the perfect everything for everything that ever, everything. However, is the air in Montana just great? Can you breathe up there?
I can breathe. You know, some people are definitely, you know, having a little issue with the altitude because we're at about 7,500 feet. And we actually have a camera that I'd love to chat with you about that's at over 11,000 feet, something that we've never done before. So that's kind of cool. But, you know, look, you know, for me, the golf course in match play, the actual course itself, you know, it isn't the most critical thing. Like, you don't need, you know, the design elements to challenge an entire field. What you need is for it to be interesting. Mm-hmm. And Moonlight Basin is beyond interesting. I mean, we have a hole that is going to play 777 yards with a 300-foot elevation drop at the actual 400, but it plays a little less than that because of elevation. You're going to see a 500-yard drive here. You're going to see, you know, just shots that go forever in the mountain air up here. And I think that that's what's going to make, you know, this match really exciting. Look, you know, all of them I've been honored and lucky to be a part of. And this one I'm particularly excited for just because of who we have in it.
Yep. So you had mentioned 777 yards, and I was definitely going to make that comment. That seems like a really interesting hole. And for the guy who hits the raised hand bombs versus the guy who hits nasty, filthy bombs, you know, could there be two better guys to step up on a 777 yard hole and put on a show?
But I'll give you, I know, you know, you guys don't like to get exclusive content, but I'll just give it to you anyway. Brady hit one over 400 the other day on the hole.
How? I mean, he works out. That's cheating, you know, for us normies.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you though, it's if you can fly the ball 300, adjust it, it's going to hit this slope and it goes down like, you know, 200 feet and it just runs and it's just awesome. And it's a completely blind tee shot. And we are going to have the pros play it from 777. We're going to have the amateurs play it from 677. And what's awesome about this hole and what makes it the most exciting for me is we're going to be raising meals for Feeding America by doing that. So if the players at a 300-yard drive, a certain amount of meals are raised, 400, 500, we're going to add the total distance of all the drives. And before some of the golf purists get all mad at me, we're going to count drives that don't land in the fairway on this hole. Because it's just raw distance here. We're not saying it's a long drive competition. It's how far can you hit it? And by hitting it far, you're going to raise money, in this case, raise meals for Feeding America, which is an awesome cause.
And you give a pure incentive to the guys to swing as hard as they possibly can instead of trying to target golf. I love that.
Yeah, you have to. And look, you know, the whole, you know, the match is designed for multiple purposes. It's to entertain. It's to give you access and discovery like you don't get in any other type of golf venue, and probably not a lot of other sporting events, where you literally hear the players and can talk to them while they're competing, you know, in the arena of sport. But it's also charitable contributions. And we have two amazing causes that we're going to be supporting this time. And that's what makes this special, because the players truly are excited about that as much as they are excited about competing against each other.
I love that. You mentioned an unbelievably high camera, and I'm dying to know what's going on there.
Yeah, so when my director, Steve Byman, and I were here about a month ago for a site survey, because of the altitude, you know, like I said, the golf course is at 7,500 and it goes up and down a little bit from there. You can't fly a blimp. You can't fly the fixed wing aircraft. You can't fly, you know, we will have drones, but you can't get that aerial perspective that, you know, we've had in each of the other versions of the mat. Well, we didn't have it at Medalist do the storms, but that we wanted to have. So, you know, we had to get creative, and that's where the folks at Turner Sports are so wonderful to work with, because we came up with this idea to put a camera on top of Lone Peak, which is over 11,000 feet. And that camera has a lens that is the latest and greatest, you know, Canon lens with a huge extender. It's, you know, it's almost 3 miles away from the golf course, but it can actually kind of cover golf. So it's just going to be phenomenal. And this, the vistas that it can see from that view of mountains all over the place here, and the golf course and the trees and everything, it's just going to be, it's going to be stunning. And, you know, just, you know, hats off to the technical team who took an idea that we had and made it happen. And that's not very easy to do all the time.
So I take it you went up early to Montana in order to get that camera out there. You hiked it up yourself?
No, I'm terrified of heights. I literally can't go into like the upper deck of a baseball stadium without being terrified. I just pointed and said, it'd be really cool if we put a camera up there. But what we ended up doing was we discovered that one of the chairlifts, kind of a gondola, will take you up there.
Okay.
So we have a truck. It takes, you know, multiple hours to do it. We have a truck that'll drive the crew that's going up there, the small crew, and then they get into a gondola and they take the gondola up to the top of the mountain. And there's actually like a little lounge up there. So they do have, you know, a safe haven in case we do get a pop-up storm or something. But so, it's just pretty awesome that we were able to pull it off.
So you've done these before. What does it look like for you as we're all enjoying it? Where are you stationed, and what's your involvement overall?
So I'm what's called the line producer of the match. So I'm in the truck, and sort of I'm making the decisions along with a team of others as to what we're going to do. And then Steve Byman, who I mentioned, is our director. He executes the plan. So we have it formatted for, you know, every hole. I do a pretty detailed format and go over it with the team. And, you know, it's what's great is we haven't had our main production meeting. We're going to have one today, but everyone's going to get a chance to contribute and make it better. And it's truly a collaborative effort. And then my job is to keep the train on the tracks in terms of time, because we have certain time cues that we want to hit. We have certain guests who I'm not at liberty to say who are going to join remotely, but we want to make sure that they're timed in. The trickiest part about this show is the audio. It's also the best part of the show. So when the booth wants to talk to a player, I have to sort of play the traffic cop to make sure that everything's working. So if Brian Anderson, our play-by-play, says, or Chuck says, you know, in something called talkback, so they can talk to us in the truck where you guys at home won't hear them, and they'll say, hey, we want to talk to Tom Brady because he just hit a great shot. I then will check with audio to say, like, hey, the booth wants to talk to Tom Brady. Open him up. Audio goes, it's good. Then I go, Tom, the booth's going to talk to you. Then I tell the booth, go. And then it just kind of happens, and that all happens in about a second and a half. So luckily for me, I can talk really fast. And I drink a lot of coffee, so I can do that. But, you know, it's the obligations I have are first and foremost is to make sure we document the event and the capture the moments that make it special, whether it's Brady holing out, whether it's Phil telling you what he's going to do and then actually doing it, mm-hmm. whether it's you know, Steph Curry and Peyton Manning. You know, I mean, Peyton just had so many zingers that he threw at people. Making sure I got to get those. That's the most important thing my job is to do. Make sure we cover those accurately. Because, look, we're away in commercial quite a bit, and things happen during that. But we'll replay anything that's great during that time. And then we have obligations we have to get in, whether it's commercials or sponsors, that we need to take care of, because those things are important and allow us to be able to have the resources to do the match.
Yeah, you mentioned Booth wanting to connect on good shots. I have a feeling it's Booth wanting to connect on the questionable shots too.
Yeah, Chuck. Absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, I mean, Chuck, you got to say this. You know, Charles Barkley's the reigning match champion right now.
Oh, true. No one
can ever take that away from him. Yeah. So Chuck, as a champion of this event, will have a perspective that very few people can have, because we've only had three of them so far, and there's very few champions we've had. So I'm excited to hear what he says. But, you know, what's awesome here is that, you know, some of the shots that are hit, if they're not well struck, they're off the planet. So we are playing modified alternate shot. And I think that's a great format for that. You know, we've experimented with a few formats through this. We have some challenge holes. That there's one in particular that does vary the format up a little bit that you'll have to stay tuned to watch. It's on the back nine. That's going to be pretty awesome, I hope. But, you know, yeah, I mean, we want to talk to the players after the good shots and the bad shots. If you remember back to match two, when Brady was struggling so much, Chuck kind of got on him. Mm-hmm. And then Brady responded by holding out and hit the famous, you know, suck on it, Chuck. And yeah. And that's the type of moment you just don't get anywhere else. And that's what we're excited to bring. And that's what my team and I have to be ready for. When that happens, that's when we have to be at our best.
So Brady, this time around, you get a little Travis Matthews scripting for him? Is he going to bring his church pants
no,
again?
No, he's an Under Armour athlete. So I would, you know, I mean, again, I think for Tom, you can tell he's been working hard on his golf game.
Mm-hmm.
And what I remember the most about the last match is seeing him in the parking lot about an hour and a half, 2 hours before the match. And it was either raining at that point or just about to rain. And he's running sprints to cones that he had set up. And someone said to him, like, you know, what are you doing? He goes, trying to win a Super Bowl.
And, that's cool.
And I think what you can't underestimate about Tom Brady is the competitiveness that he had. You know, I was lucky enough to go out there with him for a few holes the other day. And he's so competitive and he wants to win so bad at everything that he does. And that's what makes him great. And that's what's awesome. And that's what, you know, I think we all want to see.
Is that sort of give us an idea of who you're leaning on this one? Or are you trying to play the middle?
Well, I mean, I don't have an opinion one way or another. I've never seen Aaron Rodgers play golf, so it makes it difficult for me to judge. You know, Bryson and Phil are we're recording this on a Monday, are going to play the golf course today. And, you know, I don't think the golf course really favors anybody. I think for me that this course could, you know, give up some birdies, but it also, you could, like I said, you could hit off the planet and you're just in the pocket. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic for, you know, players who haven't played it a bunch to how are they going to navigate, you know, are they going to, you know, what Phil did so masterfully winning with Charles Barkley, which truly is one of the great accomplishments in sport, is he got Charles just to find the fairway.
Yeah.
Because Phil 220 yards away is probably better than Charles from 100. So Phil is such a great coach / caddy, motivator, guru, whatever you want to say, that if he can get Tom to put the ball in certain positions, and Tom can putt, we all know that from the last one. If Phil can be hitting, I think the key is whoever can get the pro to hit the most second shots into these par fours and par fives, that's the team that's going to be successful.
Interesting. And it is a little bit of a different dynamic because Charles was a wild card and always has been. But it seems like watching Rodgers swing, watching Brady swing, they both can move the ball pretty good. So maybe 100 yards is not so bad.
No, they definitely can. But at the same time, you know, I mean, Phil and Bryson are two of the best in the world. So even as good as those players are, I always think that like when the cameras show up and the pressure of competition comes on, it's a little different than just playing even in a money game with your friends. So, I mean, you know, you've probably heard about it, you know, at the Granddaddy. I mean, those are some excellent players that Callaway gets to play against. And then they show up at the Granddaddy, they see Jason Finley on the first tee and they all turn into J-Dax and they just get absolutely pounded. It's a similar situation here that it's just, you get out of your comfort zone the same way that if Phil or Bryson, you know, walked on a football field, even in, you know, a non-contact situation, it would be more challenging than their natural abilities would allow them to have. So it's one of those things where I think you got to put the amateurs in the best position to succeed. But I think having the amateurs try to make birdie putts or eagle putts on drivable par fours or on par fives is probably where you want them if the pros were strategizing.
Okay. I mean, and you're no slouch from a winning perspective. Would you say there's a piece of hardware that's most near and dear to you, and do you wrap it around your waist, or is it something you hold in your hand?
No, I mean, I'm very foreign to winning. I don't win very often. I mean, you know, my last Granddaddy appearance, Sizzle, I'm still recovering from the beatdown he gave me, you know, as he shot a career round. But, you know, look, it's my problem in golf that helps me in TV is my brain just doesn't stop. It doesn't slow down, which is really great when you're looking at multiple monitors and trying to go through formats and filter, you know, 30 people talking in your ear at once, listening to announcers, etc. It's a really good thing to have as a television producer. It's not a good thing to have on the golf course. So I need to learn to kind of slow it down and maybe that'll happen one day.
So for those out there who aren't familiar, the Granddaddy is an event that's put on by THP and Callaway and is
just... Who's not familiar with the Granddaddy?
Yeah, well, we have...
If you're listening to this and you don't know what the Granddaddy is, so if you're listening to this, you know, I would say maybe the people listening to the pirated version of this podcast, Nate, don't know what the Granddaddy is, but the people listening to the original off course should all know what the Granddaddy is. But if you're not, just go search through the THP forum and give yourself 7 to 10 days to read all the... all the smack talk.
Arguably the greatest amateur event ever put on. Brand new clubs, equipment, an experience like no other. It's been at the Hideaway for the longest time. There is a lot on the line every year for you guys. And I'm curious to know, is there any thoughts for you right now as to 2021 Granddaddy? And are we going to see you back on the team?
I mean, you know, it's all up to Captain Finley, but I did go in preparation for the Granddaddy. I did a scouting trip in April, and I went and played both courses and kind of mapped out my lines and sort of really concentrated. And I did ask Lay, who played in the group with us, she's the head professional there, you know, where are potential hole locations, and I made sure that I putted those hole locations numerous times. So I'm quietly hoping that I get an invite to the Granddaddy, but you don't take that for granted, and it's an honor when you get asked and selected. But if asked, I'll probably try to go over there 10 to 12 more times and really learn the golf course in a way that no one else has to provide an advantage that I probably need.
What that means for THPers who have been there is you get blueberry-infused vodka and Choco Tacos and just hope for the best. Is there accuracy to that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big Choco Taco fan. Ethan Ganote on our team is kind of the king of dessert. He will have dessert for breakfast. He will have dessert for lunch. And he will, of course, have dessert for dessert. I'll tend to start the day with a Bloody Mary. Luke Williams is kind enough normally to put one on my golf cart prior to teeing off. And just kind of let the day morph from there. But, you know, if I am able to play this year, if I'm selected to play, I'm going to probably take it a little more serious because I'm just tired of losing, you know?
Okay. Like it's on the individual side because you guys don't often lose Granddaddies. In fact,
I've never been a part of a losing Granddaddy team. Yeah. There were a few people who were key cogs in the one losing effort, and they're no longer at Callaway, and it's probably no coincidence. But I would say that I was lucky enough in the last Granddaddy to play with Finley. And we did not lose my afternoon team match. I do well in the team matches. Tyler Sheehan and I have had a great partnership where you would think we would dominate, and we normally don't because we get in each other's way because I'm not used to hitting from where Tyler drives the ball, and he's not used to hitting from the places where I drive the ball because he would hit a 6-iron to get there. But in the singles match, I have struggled more than I'd like to, and I'd like to reverse that. My first year I won, but after that it's been downhill. But I will say that that playing in the last years with Sizzle was one of the highlights of the granddaddy for me. We had a blast, and it's been nice to stay connected with him and friends with him through the couple of years.
That's cool.
Even though, you know what's funny though?
Tell me.
He does owe me a dinner.
Okay.
That's almost 2 years delayed. It's supposedly a New Orleans Seafood Creole Festival. Mm-hmm. And I'm waiting for my crawfish, and I'm waiting for the rest of it. So maybe he'll listen to this podcast and finally pay up.
Oh, well, shots fired. How is your game right now? Is it looking good?
No. It's funny because the more that I try to, you know, get time, it's just been really, it's just, you know, I mean, no one should feel sorry for me, but it's just a time crunch. Yeah. I have not picked up a golf club in over a month, which is awful, and I hate it. But, you know, I've really been doing everything I can do to make sure that Callaway's, you know, content needs are fulfilled. I've been lucky enough that we've had wins at both the PGA. We had wins at the US Open, and I would take a win every single week and all the work that comes with it. But there is some work. We have a really cool piece of content with John Rahm coming out pretty soon that we were fortuitous to schedule, that we actually filmed with him 3 days after his win. That's in Scottsdale. Cool. So that timing worked out pretty good. And then I've been working on the match on kind of my spare time. So I try to balance my time to give Callaway 100% of my attention, and then kind of do the match stuff kind of around that, in terms of one of the great abilities of being a TV producer is you don't need much sleep. So I'm a super early morning person. So I could be up at 5:30 working on the match until I go into work at Callaway, work a full day, and then come back and do a little bit more for the match. But no, I'll get out there a little bit after this. And like I said, it's the granddaddy still a few months away. And that's kind of what I target my golf year for. I don't want to peak in July. I need to peak in December.
Okay. Well, let's get a little sneak peek of what's in the bag then, because Callaway's got some pretty impressive product out this year between the new Apex line and the Epic Speed. So what are you going? Do you have diamonds on your drivers or no?
No. I'm not good enough for drivers. So I was with Phil at an ad shoot, and I'm lucky enough to have a pretty good relationship with him from working all these matches with him. And he talked me in to my setup. So I use like a 47-inch Epic Speed LS driver, 9-degree, and I have it set at +1. I am so steep, like horrendously steep. The driver is my nemesis. You know, I'm lucky enough, I used to do a podcast with Henrik Stenson until Henrik fired me because he blamed me for his play. But I'm very Henrik-esque in that I use the 3-wood all the time. Okay. That's why we get along so well. And I will say that I use a 3+, and that's kind of my version of a driver a lot, mm-hmm. because my golf course is not very long. There's only a couple holes where the driver, a long drive is a tremendous advantage, but I committed this year that I was going to hit the driver every time that a driver is allowed to be hit. You know, obviously we have a couple short par fives that turn like horrendous angles, so I can't do it there. So I have the Max 3+, and then I have the regular Epic Speed 5-wood, and then I recently added, thanks to Garrett Pon, a 7-wood. So my best clubs in the bag are probably my fairway woods. So why am I trying to hit something, you know, in terms of the long iron or hybrid or utility, mm-hmm. or something? I just don't hit them well. So I've gone to a 7-wood, and at my golf course, which is in Solana Beach in San Diego, there's 2 par threes that are perfect for a 7-wood most of the year, when the air is not too heavy. So that works out pretty well for me. The rumors are that people are asking me to go to a 9-wood, 11-wood, 13-wood, and I wouldn't be against it. I would say that I don't care what's in my bag as long as it helps me play my best. And through fitting and through, you know, Garrett's kindness, I've discovered that this is the best setup for me. So then for the 5-iron, I actually use the DCB.
Okay.
I want to have something that I have complete confidence in, that I can get it up in the air and that it'll go. And then from the 6 through the 9-iron, I'm in the standard Apex. And then in the pitching wedge and the A wedge, I currently have the Apex Pros, and that's simply because I love how they look. It is probably not the best performance club for me. And before the Granddaddy, I'll probably make a change to regular Apex, because regular Apex are insane. I'm sure you've hit them, but they're just, for me, they're just perfect. But I love the look of the pros. So I'm going for the style over substance there. And then I use our CB wedges in a 58 and a 54. And a lot of people haven't tried those because they want to use kind of the tour wedge.
Yeah.
But Dave Noble, Yodi Nev's kind of, you know, said to me, he's like, because I was a big sure-out guy. I always had the highest lofted sure-out, and I just use that around the green. I don't hit a blade for my iron, so why am I going to hit a blade for a wedge?
Right. I just had this chat the other day with someone. I don't understand the fear, and if anyone's actually hit CBs from Mac Daddy, I mean, they're phenomenal wedges.
Yeah, so for me, it's great. And then there's nothing I can't do out of a bunker from those that I can, you know, that I mean, and the jaws are phenomenal, but for me, this works well. And then I haven't changed putters in a while. I'm in a Toulon Atlanta that I stole out of Sean's office. It's like this super clean look with just one little mint green line on it. I'm not a mint green fan, but it just happened to be there. And then he did the grip that matched it. And I don't know who it was for. I'm assuming it was for a tour pro or something, but I hit a few putts with it in the office and made everything and stole it. And I'm not giving it back. So that's kind of the bag. And then I've switched to the Chrome Soft X LS golf ball.
Yes. Great ball.
Yeah, I just think, you know, for me, as I said, I'm so steep, so I generate tons of spin. And you know, Josh Kendall, who's the golf pro that I work with at my club, when I actually get a chance to get out there, and I don't think we've had a lesson this year, but we did a test at the end of last year where we took the quad in a simulator and we hit the X and we hit the LS. And the spin difference for me on the pitching wedge and the 7-iron, it was less spin, but it wasn't, you know, horribly noticeable. It wasn't where it was going to change my game. But the driver was such a difference, and the 3-wood was such a difference in carry that it made sense. Because, you know, in San Diego, we don't get a lot of roll. You know, the air's heavy. The fairways are normally moist. Even in the summer when we don't get a lot of rain, it seems like, you know, because my course is kind of a little bit of a valley, everyone's sprinklers kind of drain down in there. So for me, the LS ball has been great, and I use the triple track version of it, and I just generally tell people, if you're not using triple track, you're crazy.
Well, I'm a blank, look down at nothing kind of guy. So I guess I'm crazy, and I'm good with that.
But why? But why? But like.
So I'll tell you why. We can debate this all day long. I put that track down, even if I absolutely 100% know it's down the line I want, I get over top of that. And you know, like you say you're too much of a mental guy when you're playing the game. I'm pretty good up until the point where I'm putting. I lose my mind looking at a line. I just haven't done it for, you know, a decade. So once you start incorporating that, it's mentally taxing.
I don't know. I just found that when you take it out there and you go practice with it, and I think if nothing else, everyone should practice with it, because you get such good feedback. Is the ball rolling end over end? Is it going sideways? Where are you striking the ball on the toe? You can pick all that stuff up, especially if you put a camera right behind, you know, when you're doing it. And then when you start doing it, you just kind of realize, like, hold on, all putting is, you know, there's two parts of it, right? There's the creative artistry of, like, I'm just going to get it to the spot and let the green and the gravity and, you know, everything kind of take it towards the hole. Or I'm going to try to be precise. And if I put it over this blade of grass at this spot at this speed, it's going to do the following. And that's kind of how I am. I'm a little more analytical with it. So for me, the triple track just works, because it encourages me to get behind the ball and say, where am I aiming? And I put the ball there. And then where I found, and I think that even Finley would agree, one of my strengths is kind of in these 5-footers that have to be made. And that's where I generally don't try to put it outside the cup. So using triple track to keep me inside the cup and hitting it firm with pace, knowing that I have the confidence to do it with that is just game changing for me. And on the opposite, I find that if I don't have it, if I have a white ball or something, I'm lost. I don't know what to do.
So I think you're in a very large group of golfers who do that. And I really need to spend more time on the putting green, trusty. And the reality is I'm probably set up wrong, but correcting. And by putting triple track down, I disagree with it. It's amazing to me how quickly people have adapted to triple track, because, you know, Truvis was a bit more of a challenge, but this is a couple things. I saw a ball the other day that was from a large competitor with a very, you know, scripty writing on the name, with triple track custom done on it. not just the three lines, but the exact same colorways. And yeah, I couldn't stop laughing. Like, how crazy that they're stuck on their ball, but they're still trying to use triple track.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we went a couple of years ago, Jason Finley and I and a couple of members of the production team, we went to St. Louis where triple track was hatched and invented and to this, you know, University of St. Louis, Missouri, to the doctor of optometry, who basically validated it. And it's this whole, you know, we've told the story, it's this vernier acuity. And what I don't think everyone understands about triple track, and it's probably because we don't do this enough, and I'll take full blame for this, is the more you use it, you actually can get better. So it's a learned skill that if you use it year over year, it may only be like a quarter percentage point or a half percentage point, but what's that worth on the golf course? I'm way better with triple track now than I was when it was introduced because I know it. But I think you're right, Dan. I think that a lot of folks get over a putt and they're like, hold on, right at the last second, I'm aimed too far left. Yeah. I got to push it right. And you can't do that with triple track, where you need to kind of get to where I think you'll see the best putters in the world. And one of the great things about, you know, my job is I get to watch these players when they actually are either performing at an event like here at the match, where I'll go out and walk some holes with the guys today, is they don't putt when they're not committed. They don't putt to, now they may miss putts. They obviously do miss putts, but it's not because they weren't committed to what they're doing. And triple track allows you to do that at a higher level, I think.
Well, I've only got you for a little bit longer, I think, today, even though I'd steal you for the whole day based on how fun this conversation's been. I'll give you an option because I have two points I'd still like to talk about. I'll let you pick the right one, okay?
Well, I'll tell you what, as long as neither of them are JB's normal stuff about like what toppings on a hamburger, you can ask both.
Well, the first one was going to be a question I thought you wanted answered based on the feedback we had previous to the episode, which was tell me your version of a good burger. But I'll take the Canadan question that was written down before that, which is, give me a good story from your content creation years. You gave us a little tidbit on Phil. There's got to be a story that sticks out to you, something fun with the guys on the Callaway staff or something like that, that just really stood out.
I mean, look, I don't want to sound, and everyone in the office is going to play this and just pound me for this, but I don't want to, you know, name drop or all this stuff. But I will say that Henrik and I have kind of a different relationship, and it's a relationship where I'm always wondering what he's going to do next to kind of pull something on me. And I think his goal in life is, even if I do something that's mildly amusing to him, he will never give me the satisfaction. So we tried a piece of content at our player shoots every year. As most folks on THP know, we go to the players, we do a large shoot, we get as many of our staffers as we can, we get a couple hours because the timing's perfect, right? Because we've already launched everything, you know, in January, February, and this gives the tour players a chance to have used it in competition, some big tournaments. It's just before the majors. We can get a lot of really good content and then use that to extend throughout the year. So I had this idea with the team that we were going to pull a prank on Henrik, because as you see, Henrik does all these great pranks, you know, mostly to Poulter, but he's done them to plenty of other players. So the idea was that he had not met Johnny Wonder yet, who we had just hired, who I'd love to chat about him when we're done with this question, because I think your audience would enjoy that. But so the idea was that we had the tour team make an exact replica of the Sub-Zero 3-wood that Henrik is currently using. Same shaft, same grip, same everything. And during a part of the shoot, I would switch it out of his bag. And then we get to the part of the shoot, and we've done this with Henrik before, where it's like, you know, he puts on his Iceman sunglasses. He's like, I'm Henrik Stenson, and I'm going to show you why I don't use the new Epic Speed 3-wood. It's because it goes too far for me. And he hits one on top tracer, and it just goes forever because that's what he does. So everyone's in on it, and I said, all right, keep cameras rolling. Johnny, why don't you grab his 3-wood and just show, you know, kind of what an amateur would do with his 3-wood. And Henrik's kind of looking at me, and he's like, right before Johnny hits, he goes, don't put a mark on the top of it. Well, what he doesn't know is that Johnny's going to basically hit one really bad, and Johnny's a good player, and just throw the club in a lake. So he hits it really bad, and he throws the club in the lake. And all I needed from Henrik was 2 seconds of like, oh my God, they threw my actual gamer 3-wood in the lake. Can't fool him. Even if we did fool him, and he to this point, and I grilled him during US Open week when he was in San Diego, I'm like, did we fool you for a half second? He's no. Quarter second, no. Millisecond, no, never. And so we couldn't release the piece of content because the look on his face was just like, that's not my three wood. And then J-Rod and I had to go fish it out of the lake because it was actually a pretty expensive club. So we stayed there for like an hour and fished it out of the lake. But, you know, it's always fun with Henrik, and I want to get him at some point, and I'm just convinced I never will. And I'm sure everybody has that thing in golf, whether it's, you want to break 70, whether it's J-Dax maybe wanting to only lose like by five to Finley, whatever it is, that's what I want to do. I want to get Henrik. And I just, I'm to this point unable, and it keeps me up at night. It wakes me up early in the morning. It haunts me. But Henrik, if you're listening to this, I'm going to get you.
So I played golf with J-Dax last week, and he carried while I used a Moto Caddy M5. You probably would have very much enjoyed us looking back at him doing wellness checks all day long. I think similar to the wellness checks he got regarding his match with Finley, this was pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that everybody, I mean, I've said for years that there should be an event where it's kind of like the Darth Finley, and it's basically Finley takes on 12 of y'all, and it plays it simultaneously, and I don't care what the format is. There could be a scramble among 12 people. I'm betting on Jason 12 out of 12 times, and he'll win because he has an innate ability to either, some say intimidate, some would say get under the skin, whatever it is. But I think, just like I want to get Henrik so bad, and that probably clouds my judgment, because you know what? If I had Johnny Wonder put an idiot mark on the club, it actually would have been believable. Throwing the club in the lake, when I look back on it, not as believable. I think it's the same thing with the Hackers Paradise THPers and Finley. You guys want to beat him so bad that you guys get in your own head, and you can't. Like, Jason wins when he just walks to the first tee.
Did you know I've never seen Finley win an event live? I've only seen him lose.
An event?
Yeah.
Like in a team match or in an individual match?
My granddaddy team, God bless them, were the only team to beat him.
Yeah, but
and
that's
he was
but
there.
But again,
front
but again,
center.
J-Rod wasn't there. I wasn't there. There were some really questionable choices on that team. That's kind of like in the Ryder Cup when we've taken some guys and you're like, really, that's who we're going to take?
Yeah.
That's what that year was. So it's just kind of a blip. It's kind of a write-off. And look, you know, one of the things that I've talked about for years with JB and Jason over Tito's is, you know, the granddaddy grudge match. And I do think there's a series of one-off grudge matches of things that we want to see. Will history repeat itself? I think if we told everybody on the THP that we're going to go live on Instagram and J-Dax gets another shot at Finley, I mean, who's not watching that? I think
everyone's watching that.
Yeah, I think if we could pull the current Callaway granddaddy team in existence, because we have some new members who you haven't seen, and there's some sticks, and that's solely the reason they've been hired, not for their work ability, but just because of how good they are at golf. Yeah, if you got your team together again, it would be a different result.
Plus, I mean, we'll never know, because I was told I'm never getting invited back. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, look, there aren't a lot of repeat customers, so that makes it tough. And I am super excited that Clayton's going to be back as an assistant captain.
Yeah, definitely.
Of all the folks that I've been lucky enough to meet through the granddaddy, his attitude is just second to none. And I just think everyone who's going to be there is going to enjoy the experience more because he's a part of it.
And this is a long time coming. We've had a bit of a blip with last year. All the things are going on.
Yeah.
So I think people are going to come with some heat this year. I do think
I mean, I think, you know, I've been lucky enough that I've traveled a little bit the last couple months. I traveled a decent amount through the pandemic, but even now you just see the appreciation for what we have, the appreciation for being able to get on an airplane and visit people and see people. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. It's awesome. And I can't wait for all of us to get into Al's house and
yes,
have some amazing cuisine and truly enjoy it, because it's one of the most special days of the year for all of us.
The legend. Well, I don't want to take too much more of your day. You've got likely a very packed schedule. Do you have any questions for me before we head out for the day?
No, I just want to, you know, two things. That if you haven't checked out our World of Wonder website, you know, this audience is why we created it. This audience is why, you know, we hired Johnny Wonder. And I think that your audience will love it. So I'd encourage you. It's callawaygolf.com/World of Wonder. You know, make sure you get in there and interact. We're also doing some fitting polls on our Twitter account, the Callaway Twitter account that Michael Verska has been doing. I know he's super popular in these forums and stuff, but yeah. I think it's just, you know, we're really trying to at Callaway you know, we got to market to everybody, but this is a special group, and we want to make sure that all gearheads are well represented. And I think Johnny does as good a job as anybody. That's why we hired him, right, to get on tour. But it really only works if there's a two-way conversation. So I would encourage everybody to go to the World of Wonder, ask questions, comment on pieces, tell us what you want to see. You know, start a thread in the forum of what you guys want to see from the World of Wonder, and I'll make sure Johnny gets in there. I know he's in the forum talking to everyone anyway, but let's make this what you guys want, and let's give you guys a sneak peek as to what's happening on tour and how it can help you guys. And then if no one's busy tomorrow, which will be, or I don't know what day you're posting this, but on July 6th at 5 o'clock Eastern, just tune into the match. Give us a chance. I know there's an NBA Finals game, but really, who wants to watch Milwaukee and Phoenix? It's just game one. But give this thing a chance. You know, Tom Brady and Phil Mickelson, you know, the oldest major champion in history, a seven-time Super Bowl and current reigning champion versus the league MVP and the mad scientist Bryson hitting balls at 7,500 feet. Who doesn't want to watch that?
So. Nasty bombs, right?
Yeah, if I could just ask you guys a favor, tune in for a little bit. Even if you're not watching, just leave the TV on for the full time, help the rating.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. But no, we're excited to do this. And a lot of great things coming from Callaway really soon. So stay with us.
I love it. Hey, thanks again. Good luck. Everything's going to go great, I'm sure. I can't wait to see this unbelievable mountain cam. And yeah, well, hopefully we'll get you on again soon. We can talk some more smack about TH Peers and Callaway employees.
Anytime. Always happy to come on. And if JB wants to join us next time, that'd be nice. He seems for some reason not to want to talk to me anymore.
Always dodging you. All right. We'll leave that hanging. Anyone out there playing this weekend, have an awesome time. Play some Callaway clubs. The new LS ball is unbelievable. I hit it last week. And yeah, we'll see you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.